Yeah, so that do that first, and then yeah, now Dan Lust can educate us on all this NCAA, you know, Supreme Court judgment here. Dan, man, thanks for coming on, buddy, man. Sorry about that. You had to wait a few seconds there for a caller, but man, you've been a busy man, Dan, man. How's it been?
It's good, and no worries, guys. I feel like I got a master class in biology. I don't know what exactly that was.
Yeah, Dan,
I feel smarter for having listened to it.
This show is like the mound visit in Bull Durham. We're solving a lot of problems here in a short amount of time, so we appreciate you.
Problems,
we appreciate
you joining the discussion. But I will take them.
All right, Dan Lust joins us. Tennessee actually up 2-0 now, and we will cut into the ball game later. But let's get into this. Okay, the Supreme Court yesterday waded into the NCAA's business. For people who want to know kind of what a landmark this is, it had been since, what, 1985 the last time that happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's a rarity that the Supreme Court even touches college sports, let alone we get a unanimous verdict. So, yeah, I think at an initial starting point, just the fact that the Supreme Court opted to take this case says a lot, but the fact that they dedicated 45 pages, single space, to a decision that really could have been one word, the word affirmed, which is a fancy way of saying we agree with the lower courts, but instead of one word, 45 pages, and trust me, guys, it took a couple hours to get through. So they're really trying to send, I believe, a message to politicians, athletic directors, coaches, that the current framework of the NCAA is not going to exist for too long.
Well, didn't Justice Kavanaugh basically say the NCAA is not above the law? And that sounds very ominous to me for the future of any organization when a justice would say that about you.
Especially when everyone's yelling at the antitrust, the complaints of the NCAA that, hey, how are they getting away with this, right? A normal business wouldn't be able to get away with not paying their athletes, exerting so much control over someone, yet that person is not an employee. So courts across our country have been kind of split whether the NCAA is right or the NCAA is wrong. So that's why the Supreme Court took the case, and there were questions about a looming antitrust exemption that the Supreme Court might have been asked to do by the NCAA. So it's kind of out in the open from that case back in the early 80s, that Board of Regents case. And I guess this is a fun kind of sports law footnote. That Board of Regents case is the reason that we have a booming college sports world today. That was the case that basically turned the national spotlight football game into oblivion. We just had networks all over the place giving as much football and basketball as we could possibly take. So that case back in the 80s is the last time the Supreme Court touched college sports, and it made it bloom into really a billion-dollar industry. So, you know, fast forward at the end of this decision with Judge Kavanaugh, yes, the NCAA is not above the law is a very important takeaway. But how about the fact that in the same sentence, we're getting student-athletes and workers, student-athletes and fair market value? So, you know, another 40 years go by, we might be looking back at this decision and say, hey, this was really forecasting the next generation of college sports. So, yeah, definitely, you know, I think they're leaning very far into the spectrum of athlete empowerment. But, you know, change is good, but I think a lot of change is on the horizon.
We're on with Dan Lust. He is at Sports Law Lust on Twitter. You need to follow him now. He's got a podcast, Conduct Detrimental. He's a professor at New York Law School. He is a sports attorney, and he is – I couldn't name all the places he's been talking about this stuff. So just he's everywhere, and now he's on Blaine and Mickey.
Well, he's just trying to help our show be a lot smarter. So I appreciate Dan coming on there for his limited time, but we will only be smart for this limited time that he's on here, I guess. And I want to start with, why did the NCAA let it go all the way to this point to Supreme Court? Did they just think knew they were going to win? I mean, 9-0 is, they might have made a boo-boo and made a mistake and was acting like a ding-dong.
Listen, guys, I can't take the credit for making the show smarter. Blaine, with those type of questions, I mean, the show is already out of hand. It's already there. Boo-boo and ding-dong. I mean, these are words right out of the law dictionary.
Of course.
Yeah. So here's the thing. The NCAA caused this, and they caused this by two levels, right? They were the ones that lost at the district court, and they could have taken their lumps, licked their wounds, and gone home. But they're the ones that appealed this to the Supreme Court. And they're the ones that are creating these headlines today. So, Blaine, to your question, it is a very good point. 5 years ago, the NCAA lost a very big case, the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit. Ed O'Bannon, people will remember him, UCLA, left-handed center. You know, he was once playing, he was at a family friend's house, or I guess a friend's house, and the son was playing an old version of, EA Sports March Madness. and there was a historical UCLA team in there. So Ed O'Bannon saw that, he saw his likeness in the game, and sued. He said, hey, I'm a former college athlete. Why am I not getting paid for this? So Ed O'Bannon took that case up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California and won and beat the NCAA in a very high court, the second highest court in the land, said the NCAA, you have to compensate players for their name, image, and likeness. It's on you. Guys, that was 2015. Between 2015 and today, the NCAA has done nothing in terms of creating legislation and creating rules to get athletes paid. So had they acted 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, we wouldn't be here, because what happened instead is the state legislature over in California said, if the NCAA is not going to do it, we're going to do it for them. And then other states started following that lead because they saw it was passing unanimously, Democrats, Republicans, everyone wanted to do it. And that's why we stand here today. Six states across our country are about to have these name, image, and likeness laws that go into effect July 1st, maybe some federal rules. But, you know, Blaine, to your point, the NCAA caused this because they refused to do anything. And now, you know, quite literally, you have Mark Emmert basically begging Congress to bail him out of a situation that they created. Please create a federal bill because we don't know what we're doing, is essentially what Mark Emmert said back into the Senate on June 10th. So, yeah, it's a mess of the NCAA's own making, and they really have themselves to blame for this.
Man. Dan, you just made me think of a whole bunch of other questions. I mean, does this open up litigation? I guess for more litigation, you know, does this open up Pandora's box to other litigation? Let's say come up with a plan that everybody is happy with as far as the athlete and all the universities, or what's going to be the cause and effect here, or do we even know them?
Yeah, so, you know, the truth is we don't exactly know what's going to happen, because this is obviously a little unprecedented and the NCAA is kind of playing it tongue in cheek. You know, the reports were for about a year and a half. The NCAA was working on name, image, and likeness. And what would that do? This, obviously, state law is going to trump the rules of the NCAA. So if you're one of those other 44 states that don't have name, image, and likeness laws, or they're not going into effect on July 1st, the NCAA would basically, they'd give you a watered-down version of what some of the states are doing. So it's a way to kind of, you know, lessen the disparity between the have and the have-nots. So the report that we got yesterday, maybe in light of the court's decision, was that, hey, you know what? Actually, we're the NCAA. We're actually not going to create name, image, and likeness. We're actually going to allow the schools to do it, and we're not going to punish the schools if they come up with these rules. So those are the reports coming out. You know, take it for what it's worth. But I think to your point, maybe that's a way of saying, hey, if we come up with rules, we might get sued because the courts are basically just telling us we're not above the law. So you know what? Let's let the schools do it, and kind of, you know, no pun intended, but punt that over to the schools. So, yeah, I guess the, you know, overarching question is, what power does the NCAA have left? If they're not coming up with the rules, federal law is controlling, Mark Emmert's not taking accountability. So I think it's really fair to question what the NCAA looks like, you know, for the next decade. I'm not sure.
Well, with Dan Lust, sports attorney, and helping this show be a lot smarter.
So this 12-team playoff thing is happening now, Dan, and that's going to make everybody more money. Blaine and I saw one article I was sharing with him last week on the show that said up to $2 billion that this could make. And there are already people who want change and want the players to see their piece of the pie that they basically build. It's built on their backs. This is not going to help keep a lid on any of this either. Once those dollar figures start to get out, I would think that will exacerbate things. That will make things move even faster when you're talking about multiple billions of dollars being made.
Right. I made this point when we were talking about the O'Bannon lawsuit once upon a time. But, you know, the amount of money that would be made from a college sports video game is in the hundreds of millions, right? You know, you're profiting, you're using the player's name and likeness to create a video game. What's really that different about ticket sales, television rights? You're obviously using the players in some sense. It's not their name, image, and likeness, but it's their services. And you're making a profit off of it. So this, this decision, NCAA versus Alston, speaks about a very minute and very kind of small sliver of NCAA restraint. Name, image, and likeness, if we get there on a federal level, we're getting further. As of right now, there's no legal right for players to get a piece of the television deals, a piece of the gate, a piece of merchandise that the school offers. But I think we're getting there slowly but surely. And, you know, the more billions that are being poured into TV deals and college football playoff, I think those roars are going to grow louder that the athletes should be getting that. But big step in the right direction this past week. Maybe we'll say this, guys. College football and college basketball are the big money makers. They always have been. You guys talked about $2 billion in the college football playoff. But once you start putting this money into the athletes' hands, I'm just, I'm a little wary of what happens to the other sports, be it college baseball, softball, swimming, golf. Those aren't technically or historically revenue-generating sports. So, I'm just a little concerned to see if the other shoe drops. Maybe it won't affect baseball, but sports a little further down the line, the rowing team, the crew team. So, we'll see. I think there have to be some type of ramifications for that.
I'm a sports attorney, Dan Lust, talking all things NCAA business right now.
Well, Dan, I just, just have two more questions. And one is, you just brought up about how it affects other sports. How does or does it play into Title IX, or does that not impact it at all?
I mean, it does and it doesn't. It's kind of interesting. There's some laws in the books that basically say Title IX is not applicable to the NCAA because they're not an entity that receives federal funds. So I've heard people say it both ways. We hear people complain about Title IX a lot. I think the interesting thing to kind of look at on the horizon, especially with the looming federal name, image, and likeness bill, if that comes into effect and there's a federal bill, and it's I've talked about it before, but it would essentially kind of wipe the slate clean. All these different states couldn't get advantages. There'd be one clean federal bill. I don't know what that federal bill is going to look like. Could that federal bill potentially give some aid to the NCAA and make it susceptible or more susceptible to Title IX? It's very much possible. But I think it's still kind of up in the air. And again, maybe just the wormhole that I kind of opened up about what sports, might get taken away from certain schools. If the schools are taking away, potentially more female sports over male sports, maybe that's an issue. But I think it's a little premature. I think anybody that tells you they know for sure exactly what the NCAA do, exactly what the conferences will do, take it with a grain of salt. Because, again, we've never seen anything like this on an amateur level, on a professional level. They're really overhauling the system, in a matter of weeks, something that's been built up over the past century.
One with Dan Lust, sports attorney. I guess lastly for me is this the beginning and the end to the NCAA?
I think it's the beginning and the end of the NCAA as we know it. An entity called the NCAA might exist 20 years from now, but during the pandemic, I think the best example, right? They were kind of punting their power over to the conferences. Hey, do you guys want to play fall football, spring football? Do you want to cancel, not cancel? That was left to the conferences. And even, this past couple of weeks, we're seeing state law take precedent over some of these schools. Now we're going to have maybe federal law take precedent. And then we have this growing version of player empowerment taking over college sports. So I don't know. I mean, all I can tell you is I watched the June 10th Senate hearings with Mark Emmert as a special, giving a special testimony. And Mark Emmert was not taking accountability. He was not the captain that was steering the ship, so to speak. So I'm not really sure if Mark Emmert knows what this next generation of the NCAA will look like. I just know that as of the last 365 days, we've seen quite the overhaul, maybe NCAA looks a little bit more like a cluster than they have ever before. So lots of disorganization, and I think some reorganization is in the works.
And Lust, wow, sports attorney.
Fantastic stuff. Absolutely. People can follow you on Twitter at Sports Law Lust. A lot of the stuff that we talked about, you've covered there in just some fantastic information. We know you're busy, Dan. Thanks. And as things develop, just know your phone will ring again and we'll have you back on.
Just throw up that bat signal. I'll be there.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it, Dan, man. Take care.
Dan Lust right there at Sports Law Lust. Again, great follow, great get by the hitman going back into his past and remembering, hey, because we said we need an attorney. Boy, new one. There you go. Always good to know that guy to come on and talk about these topics. Longhorns threatening a little bit. We'll take a quick break when we come back. Maybe we can cut into the game and see what's going on with these Vols and Longhorns. It's Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone.